The 20th year in the life of the United Nations is being observed throughout the world as International Cooperation Year, in the belief that greater awareness of the achievements of cooperation, rather than a preoccupation with conflict, will advance the cause of peace and human welfare. On this theme, United Nations Radio is presenting a series of special programs on the extent and nature of cooperation through international organizations. In this program, called Protect and Prepare, the speaker is Alexander Scorby.
If you had about $37.5 million to spend, and if the money was available to you in the currencies of more than 100 countries, what would you do with it all? That, I know, is the sort of question that invites you to play a universally popular solo game. But please, before you launch yourself into delicious fantasies about private yachts and gilded palaces, may I submit a more pragmatic shopping list, including items such as stethoscopes and baby scales, spades, rakes, hoes and scythes, hand puppets and slide projectors, saws, hammers and screwdrivers, insecticide sprays and vitamin pills, water pumps and bicycles, well-digging rigs and cans of powdered milk, pots and pans and portable radios. In addition, if you like, you could contribute to the cost of training doctors and nurses or midwives and teachers. The chances are, of course, that even without those millions at your personal disposal, you have already bought some of those things. Not for yourself or directly for anyone else. But enough of this obscurity. What I'm leading up to is simply that the multi-currency figure of more than $37 million is the amount that UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, spent last year on supplies and services to 116 countries, with only one objective, that the children in them have a chance to grow up in health and with the knowledge and skill required for a productive life for both their own and their country's benefit. A point worth noting right away, I think, is that that sizable sum of money was contributed to UNICEF voluntarily by private individuals of all nationalities, by numerous organizations, and by more than 100 governments. It makes the UNICEF story one of the really tangible examples of international cooperation. And because so many are involved in it, I hesitate to single out any one person. I hesitate, but I'm going to do so just the same. My reason is simply that his contributions have had a rather special impact, and because he eloquently acknowledges that he is only one among a great many. He is a man who's made millions laugh, none more heartily than the world's children. He is Danny Kaye.
I can only say for myself that having left this country with a vague notion of what UNICEF is, I never have been so startled and never became so involved in any single organization in my life. And although many people have seen my face or heard my voice either on television or on the films, and have attributed much more credit to me than I really deserve, the thing I was most startled by was the fact that there are hundreds upon thousands of people who devote their lives and their energies and their good thoughts and wishes to a problem which I think is one of the most important in the world. And to see these people devote themselves with such zeal and such effort and such determination is one of the most rewarding things that I have ever encountered in my life, and it has made me a much happier man because I have been able to contribute even a tiny bit toward the incredible job that UNICEF is doing throughout the world.
Danny Kaye will not be offended, I'm sure, if we don't dwell here on his contribution, on the filmmaking tours he has made of the regions where UNICEF is at work. Films which illustrate that work in genuinely human terms. Instead, let's examine why the incredible job has to be done. A man who understood why with crystal clarity was Maurice Pate. Until his deeply and widely mourned death last January, he had been UNICEF's executive director for 18 years, right from its inception, to be exact. The essence of Maurice Pate and of the organization he headed was voiced by one of the many who paid tribute to his memory. Maurice Pate, he said, was truly an international civil servant, a man whose devotion to people knew no geographic or political boundaries. But to get back to the why, here's part of a recording Maurice Pate made a couple of years ago on the occasion of Universal Children's Day. In the warm and measured style so many remember, he speaks of the needs of children.
These needs are great. 2/3 of the children in the world do not have enough to eat or to wear, nor are they sufficiently protected against disease. Others suffer from mental or physical handicaps. Many children lack educational and vocational opportunities.
In trying to meet these needs, many organizations are involved and work closely with UNICEF.
The International Union for Child Welfare, with its headquarters in Geneva, bends every energy toward making all needs of children known throughout the world. In the United Nations family, UNICEF, WHO, FAO, UNESCO, and ILO likewise help draw the world's attention to the health, educational, and vocational needs of children. The organizations that I have mentioned, and a great many others, work steadily to bring food, medicine, or necessary guidance to millions of deprived children.
But this is not, as it might seem to be, a great charity drive on a global scale. The work is not motivated by any head-patting sentimentality. It is rather a strictly practical expression of human solidarity and of a new but growing influence in international relations. On this point, I recall something said recently by Mrs. Zena Harman, the current chairman of the UNICEF Executive Board. Unfortunately, there was no tape recorder present when she spoke, but let me quote her words. "The nations of the world," she said, "have understood that the future of mankind will depend not only on their ability to settle conflicts by wise judgments, but on their capacity to ensure the health, physical and mental, of their citizens." There is also, added Mrs. Harman, wider understanding for the contention that investment in what are now being called human resources must commence with the mother and the infant child. And fortunately, it is now almost universally accepted that the aim of all development is to improve the well-being of the people and the quality of human life. The welfare of mothers and children has, of course, always been at the heart of what I might call UNICEF's protective assistance. Last year, for example, the fund helped 165 basic health and maternal and child health projects in 96 countries. Some of those baby scales and cans of powdered milk on the pragmatic shopping list were certainly used in them. But these days, UNICEF is devoting increasing attention to preparation assistance, helping to prepare the young for a productive place in society. This means help in education. Now, rather than describe some elaborate project as an example of what is being done in this field, let me tell you about a very simple, down-to-earth, but highly effective scheme in which UNICEF has been involved in the Philippines. There, it was discovered that a very large number of school teachers hadn't had a day's refresher training in 25 years. In one region, 80% of the teachers had dropped below the minimum standards for a teacher now required in the country. So, what to do? Obviously, if they were all taken out of the schools for a while to attend courses, things would be badly disrupted. Well, this is where the portable radios on the shopping list came into the picture. UNICEF representatives consulted the University of Mindanao, and the idea of a radio forum was evolved. UNICEF supplied some portable receivers, which were distributed in various locations where teachers could group together to listen to broadcast courses arranged by the university. UNICEF's man in the Philippines at the time this scheme got underway was Paul Edwards, and this is what he has to say about it.
This is a very practical way of doing this business. Radio is cheap, radio is effective. By putting a little radio set that may cost us somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 in the possession of a teacher in a fixed location, other teachers can group around that radio. The schedules are set, the time is known, and they will be given first-class instruction in the things where they're weakest, in mathematics, in science, in the various fields that so badly need attention.
That's only one out of a large library of stories of the sort of action UNICEF is constantly taking, either on its own or, more frequently, in cooperation with the technical agencies of the UN. But I won't tell any more because I'd rather share a thought with you about what they all mean when viewed in a broad perspective. Perhaps while listening to all this, you've thought, all right, this is fine, but what's so remarkable about it? Everybody loves children, everybody wants them to be well and happy. So why make such a big issue out of something that's perfectly natural and normal? Well, maybe so. But what about the squalid exploitation of children which Charles Dickens wrote about? That, you say, was long ago. Times have changed. To that I'll agree, with some reservations. And here's one of them. If things are so much better now, why, I wonder, was it necessary to draft, and why did the UN General Assembly decide it was necessary to adopt the Declaration of the Rights of the Child? That was as recently as 1959. And the Declaration, you know, has been called a pretty revolutionary document because it flatly contradicts an age-old belief that a child has no rights of his own, that he's just a chattel of his parents, to be loved or exploited according to their whims. Now, one of the key articles in that Declaration is that the child should not be admitted to employment before an appropriate minimum age. But only 2 years ago, the International Labour Organization reported that despite the general progress made in setting a legal minimum age for employment, the greater part of the world's children who should be at school or at play are at work. Millions of young children are working long hours, sometimes even from the age of 7 or 8, in quarries, mines, factories of all sizes, fields, and offices. Of course, there are often formidable obstacles to the abolition of child labor, particularly in the developing countries. That ILO report even observed that abolition could do more harm than good if there are no schools and no provision for compulsory education up to the minimum age fixed for entry into employment. So clearly there's no room for complacency. The whole issue is a big one. And when all its dimensions are brought into focus, it's not difficult to see that the work of UNICEF and of all the agencies it works with, makes an awful lot of sense in this largely senseless world of ours. It is, as I think I said earlier, a practical expression of human solidarity, of true cooperation. But enough from me. Before closing, I would like to introduce Maurice Pate's successor, the new executive director of UNICEF, Henry R. Labuisse.
Some of you knew Maurice Pate intimately, far better than I did. But all of us know of his great achievements and outstanding qualities as a man. I know that it would not be easy to follow in the footsteps of such a person. The difficulty is emphasized when I bear in mind the long years he served in this post. However, I can assure you that I shall do my best to lead and carry forward the work of UNICEF and to adapt it to the changing pattern of events.
Mr. Labuisse, thank you. And under your direction, may UNICEF not only keep the support of the millions who already appreciate it, I'm sure there's no doubt about that, but may it gain millions of additional active cooperators.
You have just heard Alexander Scorby in one of a series of special programs from United Nations Radio produced for 1965. International Cooperation Year.